NPR.
Hey, everyone. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Cardiff Garcia, and I'm joined today by producer Darius Rafieyan, who only has a vague idea of why he's here. Darius, how are you? A little trepidatious?
Apprehensive and a little bit concerned.
You're actually here for a very specific reason. As you well know, in the process of doing research and reporting for all of our stories, we come across an astounding array of, like, mind-blowing facts and figures from the world of business and economics. And we come across way more than we can ever actually do a whole show about. And it's frustrating to me because I find these facts and figures so interesting, and I want to share them, but I don't have an avenue to do that. So we're just going to start this new kind of show. We're going to call it Five Favorite Fun Facts and Figures.
Great. Sort of like an island of misfit facts.
Exactly.
Like, they don't have anywhere to belong, but they're interesting, so we're going to give them some time to shine.
Exactly. And the reason you're here is that, let's face it, I'm a bit of a dork, okay? So I might find these facts
lovable
and figures
dork, I should say. Lovable dork.
Appreciate that. I need somebody to bounce these off of to tell me if they are, in fact, as amazing as I find them, okay? So after the break, I'm going to give you five amazing facts and figures from the world of finance and economics and business, all right? And we're going to talk about them.
Bring it on.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Capital Group, home of American Funds, an investment firm that has helped change your clients' "Can I?" into "I can." Visit CapitalGroup.com today. Talk to your advisor or consultant for investment risks and information. Support also comes from American Express. Say yes to payment flexibility and card choices, including ones with no annual fee. Don't do business without it. Rates and fees apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/no annual fee.
Okay, we're back, everybody. I'm here with producer Darius Rafieyan, and here's the first fact and figure. Darius, are you ready for this?
Lay it on me.
Okay, so if you go back to 1948, okay, the average amount that the U.S. economy grows every single year is about 3.2%. So from year to year, that's the average growth rate of the U.S. economy. But you know when the last year was that the U.S. economy actually grew by that much? Was 2005. We are now on our 14th straight year of below average economic growth. This spans across three presidencies and four Federal Reserve chairs. Isn't that amazing?
That is really amazing. I mean, is this basically, is the average just been skewed by like one or two really good decades?
No, by a few really good decades. But also, the issue here is that the U.S. is now quite clearly the world's biggest and most advanced economy, right, by most measures. And it's harder to pursue a fast growth rate once you get to that point than if you're an economy that's catching up to the biggest and most advanced economy. So some of this is natural, but some of it is also just the fact that U.S. productivity growth has slowed down quite a bit in the last decade and a half. And productivity growth is a measure of how efficiently a country's workers are making up the goods and services that are in the economy. And so year to year, U.S. workers are still improving, but the improvement isn't as big as it used to be, for example, in the decades after World War II. All right, the next fact that I thought was kind of interesting, and which says something about the particular nature of the U.S. economy, here it is. Applicants to Harvard University, if they are a legacy applicant, in other words, if they are somebody who has a parent who already went to Harvard, these applicants have about a 34% chance of getting in.
Okay.
So roughly a 1 in 3 chance of getting into Harvard.
I like those odds.
Okay. If you are not a legacy applicant, if you do not have a family member who had gone there before you, you only have a 6% chance of getting in.
Whew.
I know.
Wow.
Right? I know.
And
it's
so that's
difference
averaged across all other applicants that aren't legacy. That's not taking into account any kind of educational background or anything. That's just like,
this is just separating them into you're either a legacy or a non-legacy applicant. And I find this interesting because it tells you something about the way that inequality in the U.S. can perpetuate itself down through the generations, which is that if your parents went to this big name, possibly the best in the world university, right? You have a much better chance of going there too, based on the fact that you have family that went there. And if not, then you don't. And so it's just, it tells me something about the structure of the U.S. economy.
I mean, this is very interesting because I feel like elite colleges, especially Ivy League colleges, really lean on this idea that they are the engines of prosperity, that they are the way that people move up the social ladder. But it seems like getting in, there's these structural barriers.
It's maybe not as meritocratic as some people believe. That's right.
Meritocratic?
Yeah.
Is it
like meritocracy?
Yeah. Can't say I've ever heard that form of that word, but I like it. I like it.
Fact number three about the U.S. economy, and it relates to the second one, okay? This is about the racial wealth gap, all right?
Okay.
So if...
I noticed you said wealth gap, not income
gap.
That's
correct.
Okay.
Wealth gap. So this is, take all of a family's assets, like their house, right? Their savings, their cash, their stocks, if they have any, right? And then you subtract their liabilities, like their mortgages or whatever debt they owe. This is their total wealth, okay? So a typical black family, in other words, the median black family, right at the 50% mark, has about $16,000 in total wealth, okay? A Hispanic family has about $22,000. A white family, are you ready for this? The typical white family has $163,000 in net wealth.
That is
a huge difference.
Egregious. I mean, shocking and egregious. But I guess, does this point to then just... the sort of across generations, these things tend to compound, right? I mean, if your grandfather was able to buy a house and able to pass that house down to your father, who was then able to, you know, have an asset to start out with, like these things can then kind of snowball, right?
Yeah, I think that is definitely part of it. And actually, our colleagues over at the Code Switch podcast made a great episode about this. It's called Location, Location, Location. We recommend that everybody go check that out. There are probably some other reasons as well. We're not going to get into all of them here. We just wanted to introduce that data point. Fact number four, okay, is about the U.S. dollar. Now,
It's a great dollar. It's one of my favorite dollars of all the dollars.
So this fact has to do with the dominant role of the U.S. dollar in the global economy, not just in the U.S. economy. Okay, so in currency trading, right, this is when anybody wants to trade, say, one currency like the dollar for the euro or vice versa. All right.
Okay.
88% of all currency trades involve the dollar.
Really?
Yep, 88%, even though the U.S. economy is only roughly 15 to 25% of the global economy, all right? In other words, a lot of people are trading in the U.S. dollar either because they're doing business abroad, they want to hold U.S. dollars, they want to hedge against movements in other currencies, whatever the reason, the U.S. dollar is involved in almost 9 out of every 10 trades for a currency. So here is the final data point. And actually, we brought up this data point on a show that we did on The Indicator more than a year ago. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Here it is. You ready for this?
Oh my God. I'm so excited.
The average age of a startup founder, okay, in the fastest growing startups at the time of founding is 45 years old. 45
really?
Years old. Yeah. Middle age.
So it turns out that the platonic ideal of a great founder isn't a like 22-year-old Harvard dropout in a hoodie and flip-flops?
That's exactly right, okay? There are obviously outliers, and there's so much media attention given to the outliers because it's so interesting when somebody who's 21 or whatever founds a company, okay? But the truth is that the average age of founding is middle age. And here's another thing that paper found. People get better at starting companies as they get older, right? And it doesn't stop. So you're better at 35 than you were at 25. You're better at 45 than you were at 35. And you're better at 55 than you were at 45. Incredible, right?
I feel like this statistic is shocking to everybody under 30 and completely unsurprising to everybody over 30.
In other words, pretty soon, time for us to start a company.
By this logic, we should probably wait because we're just going to get better at it.
That's true, but then if you could wait forever.
Yeah,
right?
I'm going to start a company when I'm like 99 years old, and it'll be the best company
ever. It's
going
to be an incredible company. That's right. Darius, that was fun, right?
Yeah, great facts.
All right. We used a number of different sources for these facts and figures we presented here today, and we will link to all of them in our show notes over at npr.org/money. This episode of The Indicator was produced by Lena Sansgiri and Darius Rafieyan, who also co-hosted, by the way. He does a little bit of everything. Nadia Lewis is our intern, and Patty Hirsch is our editor. The Indicator is a production of NPR.